Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Very pleasant good afternoon to you. Wednesday edition of the Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. You can reach us anytime at stevejonesshow.com. Email is stevejones@wkok.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle at stevejonespsu. You can also listen to our shows anytime, anywhere, thanks to the podcast page at stevejonesshow.com. We can also drop our podcasts on both iTunes, Apple Podcast app, and Google Play. If you listen to us on iTunes, don't hesitate to leave us a review. Found a couple of new five-star reviews recently. Thank you so much for that. So we're counting down to the Eagles and the Vikings on Sunday, which you can hear here on News Radio 1070 WKOK and over on Eagle 107 at 107.3, kickoff at 6:40. Philadelphia Eagles insider Dave Spadaro scheduled to join us this afternoon at 4:35. Steve will be in the Sunbury Motors studio in just a few. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Now, the shakeup in Pittsburgh is beginning. A couple of days now after that 45-42 loss to Jacksonville, the Steelers have decided to let go offensive coordinator Todd Haley. Haley's contract was up. I think the question is how much friction has been going on between Todd Haley and Ben Roethlisberger. A lot of it was behind closed doors, and we'll never know. But we know 6 years ago Ben was not thrilled when the Steelers forced out Bruce Arians and brought in Todd Haley, and some have criticized Haley critically for some of his play calling, especially on Sunday with that fourth and very short. And it could have been a Ben keeper instead of tossing it back 5 yards to Lev Bell. So now the Steelers need a new offensive coordinator. We'll have to wait and see.
And congratulations, by the way, to the first applicant that put his resume in. All I know is I've heard through the grapevine the exact reaction of Mike Tomlin when he got the first resume for offensive coordinator. Digital media coordinator? What is this?
When the Haley news broke a few hours ago, Suit was ecstatic. He was just doing backflips down the hall. He has already made a prediction for the 2018.
Can we back up 1 second?
Yes.
Allow me to visualize him doing a backflip. Okay.
Oh, sorry.
All right. Okay. Okay. Please continue with your sentence. I wanted to make sure we got that out of the way.
He is already he's already given his prediction as to how the Steelers will do in 2018. He thinks they're going to be 9-7, that they're going to regress a little bit.
Oh, so in other words, getting rid of Haley, they're going to go backwards. Okay, I got this right.
It doesn't make any sense to you. I said to him, you make no sense at all. You want Haley out of there. And it's like, you got your... I said, hey, yo, you got your wish. And the story broke 3 hours ago. And I said to him, okay, smarty pants, who are they going to get that's better than Todd Haley? Who are they going to get? He automatically tells me, Mike Munchak. Well, he turned down a second interview with Arizona. Well, I think Mike Munchak should stay as offensive line coach. I don't think he should be the offensive coordinator.
It's just unreal.
I know.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm very surprised of the Todd Haley move. I mean, what's their name? Steel Curtain. Steel Curtain. They're just giving up way too many points. They gave up close to 27 points a game. They got to get that defense fixed. I think they have to move forward just with the complete assumption that Ryan Shazier is not going to play anymore. I think they have to take that mentality, and they're going to have to dial in draft-wise on linebacker.
Okay. Let's do this statistically for a moment.
Sure.
The offensive coordinator has been fired, correct?
In a nutshell. I mean, contract up, not going to renew. So technically, yeah, he was.
Okay. Here in the back, I have a quick question. Okay, so you didn't think that 42 points would be enough?
Should be enough.
Exactly.
Should be.
The offense without the benefit of a takeaway by the defense, because the Steelers didn't have any takeaways in this game, right?
Or sacks.
Okay? Yeah. But again, with a long field almost every single time, still scored 42 points. The problem is not with the offense. The problem is with the group that gave up 38 of the 45 points.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay, that's the problem. Okay, that group created no turnovers. That group created no sacks.
Yep.
That group created no field position.
Correctamundo.
Right? Yet we're doing backflips over the offensive coordinator being dispatched.
Not me. I wouldn't do any backflips at all. I'm just throwing the question out. Who are they going to get that's better than Todd Haley as the offensive coordinator?
I ask this question all the time. Okay? There's certain times where it's obvious and you have to do something. I got it. But then you get into these murky ones where what is, for the basic fan, always the simplistic way, you got to change coaches. Or simplistic media. Now, there's some really great media, and we have them on as our guests all the time. I mean, we are very, we're not going to put guests on that, in my opinion, don't hit the respect level. How about that?
Right.
I mean, we just don't throw people. If I think somebody doesn't know what they're talking about, I'm not going to put them on the air.
Right, and I brought thankfully, the names that I've brought to your attention, you know, we put them through the vetting process before I even make a phone call or an email.
And there's some that are just obvious right away.
Sure.
You know, like, okay, great, perfect.
Absolutely.
But then there are other ones like, they just don't have the chops to sit there and talk about what should or shouldn't be done with a program. I mean, there's just some people who just don't have the chops to do it. And you know, we're not talking about the Ed Bouchettes and the Ron Cooks and the Jerry Dulacs of the world. I mean, who do we have on last week?
Ray Fittipaldi.
I mean, sure. Those guys have chops.
Sure do.
Been around the block, seen it, understand it, okay?
And all in the same market, which is phenomenal.
Right, and have covered it forever, and they know what it's like and how it works. But you know. But there are others, like, no matter what, they got to get rid of this guy. Just slow down a second here. Okay, let's really look at what is the Steelers' problem. Okay, did the offense give up the late points to the Patriots? No. Did the offense give up 38 points to Jacksonville? No. No, they gave up 7. That's not the issue. The issue is, okay, and the big part of that issue was that they lost, to me, the two most important players on defense for Pittsburgh are Ryan Shazier and Cam Hayward. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. One word that resonates, though, that you said about a minute or two ago is simplicity. And Stan Saverin mentioned this on the radio network as we were heading home. Chuck Knoll had an old saying, the goal is to knock you on your butt before you knock me on my butt.
Yeah.
So I just hope that moving forward, the new offensive coordinator will add a little more. I would like to just see more balance. I would like to see more methodical moves down the field. Is it just me, or just seems like there's more Sandlot playground plays lately?
No, I think, no, I don't think that. The Steeler offense has, you know, the way they use Vance McDonald and so forth. I thought they did a good job of incorporating
Vance had a great
him.
Game on Sunday. He had a terrific game.
Now, he's not a good blocker.
No.
He's not a good blocker. You know, the way they incorporated Juju Smith-Schuster, the way they overcame not having Martavis Bryant for a period of time and kind of getting him back on track. There's been a lot more to this. I'll be honest with you. The offensive line for the Steelers, they don't light me up. They've got some nice names there. Pouncey, DeCastro, Villanueva, Gilbert and Foster. All right. But I want to ask you something. How come Jacksonville got pressure with four against that offensive line?
I'm still trying to figure that out.
All right, because they're better.
Yeah.
Number two, why does Le'Veon Bell run the way he does? You know, Le'Veon Bell gets a lot of praise for how he runs, right? You know, that, like, delay, wait, right? You want to know why? Okay, seriously, I'm asking you, why does he run the way he runs?
It's like he's waiting for someone to over-pursue on the other side of the ball so he can scoot past.
No, because when he gets the ball, there's no hole. If there's a hole, he'd run through it. That's why he runs the way he runs. There's no hole. And all of a sudden, kind of wait. Now, okay, now something, and then I'm going to go. That's why he runs the way he runs. Because they are not opening holes. Because believe me, if there's a hole, you think he's going to wait? do you really think he's going to wait?
No, one step in a cloud of dust.
Right, he's gone.
Yeah.
The Steelers' offensive line does not open holes. Now, they get stalemates. Now, the Steeler offensive line gets stalemates. They get stalemates, all right, which then allows him, in other words, nobody's getting through, so that gives him a chance to look. But the reason he runs the way he does, and everybody's like, hey, how about that? How about let's analyze it, okay? He doesn't have a hole to run through. That's why he runs the way he runs. I mean, really, let's get serious and get real here. I never hear anybody talk about that. Okay, every running back that runs a certain way, boom, if there's a hole, they go. You notice Bell the other day when they ran the quick hitters against Jacksonville, he ran through the hole. He didn't, like, wait for something to happen. I mean, if you're really honest about it, and you really want to, okay, where are the holes that offensive line is creating where a running back gets the ball and goes, hey, great, look, there it is. There is rarely a great look, there it is. There is, okay, whoa, okay, there, okay. Now, they're great at stalemates. They're great at stalemates, but Le'Veon Bell runs the way he does because when he gets the ball, there is nothing, there is no place for him to go. Have you ever thought about it that way?
I've never thought of it that way.
Because there's no place for him to go. That's why he's like, okay, wait a minute. Okay, there it is. Okay, good. Finally, it opened up over here. And everybody marvels at it. And I've sat there the entire time. I'll always look at it and think, the heck are they doing up front? They're not getting him any holes. I've always looked at it that way.
It's another reason why we got to get to a football game together. This is why I would learn something while watching a game in the house with you.
I mean, that's the thing that, like, oh, look at the Steeler offense. Offensive line, what? They got destroyed by Jacksonville, and he runs the way he does because they do. Let's give them an A for getting stalemates. And a stalemate is good. That means there's no penetration. All right, so they prevent penetration on running plays. But they do not at the initial block turn and create a hole for him. That's why he has to, like, okay, now I'm going to go. Because believe me, if there was a hole over there, you think he'd wait? Do you really think he'd wait if there was a hole here, then a hole there the next play, and a hole here the next day? Right? He wouldn't wait. He'd go because he's a running back. He's trying to get the daylight. Well, when he gets the ball, there's a stalemate up front. There is no daylight. So what I found very interesting about the steel. Oh, oh, we got Pouncey and DeCastro, and we got Villanueva. Like, I'm sitting there like, going, I watch you play, okay? And you're great at stalemates. You're not great at opening holes. And against Jacksonville, you were lousy at pass protection. Again, ask yourself. Oh, over and over again, we hear everyone marvel about how Le'Veon Bell, how patient, blah, blah. Okay? Did you ask yourself why he's had to be that way? Because something works doesn't mean there's not a reason why it had to work that way. Because it has to work that way for Le'Veon Bell, because if he just does it normally, he's going nowhere because they're not opening holes. Now they're getting stalemates, which then buys him and buys them time. And then Le'Veon Bell's smart enough to see where that crease is and he gets through it. But I'm not quite sure they're as good up front as everybody says they are, because every time I watch that, I'm thinking to myself, okay, great, so there's no place to go, so now he's got to kind of dance around. And I've thought that over and over and over again. Right, the reason he runs that way is the offensive line really isn't as good as you think it is. Okay, it's forced him to run that way because, again, if they were really good in blowing people off the ball, boom, blow them off the ball, boom, blow them off the ball, they'd be in hole. And believe me, he's not going to sit there, you know, this is my style, I'll wait. I know there's a hole over there, but my style's to wait. No, if he saw the hole, he'd take off because he wants yards. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. I was telling Sean during the break, I said, look, if you're on Interstate 80, and you may be driving on Interstate 80 right now, and the highway is wide open, you put it on cruise control and you just zip down the highway, right? If something happens, construction or something else, and they make you take a detour, you then patiently have to get off the highway and go a different route. That's Le'Veon Bell running. Hey, every time he turns around, he's being told there's a detour. Be patient. Why? Because they're more often than not, when you see him dancing and waiting for something to happen, it's because there was no hole.
Sometimes the truth hurts. The first 2 weeks of January with sub-zero temperatures put a hurtin' on Sunbury Motor sales. Well, bundle up and save while SMC delivers the biggest discounts imaginable. Sunbury Motors Ford wants to see you in a brand new Escape or F-150. Save up to $8,000 on new Escapes starting at $20,825. Or take up to $14,500 off a new Ford F-150 starting at $25,969. Sunbury Motors Kia doesn't want you to pay a dime in interest for your new Kia. Finance a new Sereno, Sportage, Optima, or Forte for 0% for 75 months.
No one has 0% for 75 months but Kia.
Sunbury Motors Hyundai wants you with America's best warranty.
10 years, 100,000 miles.
Plus, you can save up to $3,807 on a new Santa Fe and $3,112 on a new Hyundai Tucson.
Bundle up and save
at Sunbury Motors Ford, Kia, or Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Wondering if during the break you usually get a text from the suit who's usually intently listening to the show as to how he feels about the Steelers blocking up front. Now, we may have had a... Now, he may be in a meeting, I don't know.
That could be. I haven't heard from him either.
No, it's... I mean, or, you know...
I heard enough from him earlier in the day.
Yeah, but see, the movie theater's usually closed in the morning, so.
He's desperate. He goes, I got nothing to look forward to. I said, what are you talking about, Mr. Olympics? Your 2 weeks of glory is less than a month away. He goes, yeah, but that doesn't last. What am I going to do between now and then? It doesn't last the whole winter. And it's like, well, get into some hockey. You know, hockey's not even at the All-Star break yet. The Pens are showing some improvement.
Or let's try selling stuff.
Yes.
All right, so let's see how that works out. What the heck? I mean, I know, you know, Jamie feels like I have her back on this.
Yes.
let's give that a shot, see how she goes. All right. I mean, that takes up 8-9 hours a day. All right. 1916, the PGA was formed in New York City. 1963, Wilt Chamberlain of the Warriors scored 67 points in a game against the Lakers. Roger Staubach, Bob Greasy appeared on the cover of Time magazine before Super Bowl VI, which the Cowboys, by the way, won 24-3. It's the only Super Bowl where a team did not score a touchdown. Al Arbor's 600th career game as a coach in the NHL in 89 with the Islanders. It was, of course, in Brooklyn, where the Islanders play now. They're going to be moving back to the island here in a couple of years. 1995, the Rams announced that they were moving to St. Louis. And in 1999, this is the day that, yes, Morton Anderson missed the field goal, my man. It allowed the Falcons to beat the Vikings to advance to their first ever Super Bowl, where they were beaten by Denver. Remember the Vikings? They were the hot team. Everybody had them picked. They're going to play at home. They're going to win the game. The Metrodome's going to be nuts. The Metrodome was nuts. And with Chris Chandler, a quarterback, Atlanta won. Interesting. Todd Haley out as offensive coordinator, creating joy within the confines of the building. Except for you. True fan who actually goes to games.
Thank you.
As opposed to the armchair fan who gets repeated offers to go to games, but is always busy. And then we find out later there was no movement from the couch. Does that seem busy to you?
This just in from the New England Patriots. Tom Brady is with our medical staff and will not be available to the media today. Oh, well. Let the fun begin.
He's with our medical staff. Oh, yeah. All right. Andrew Callahan, 24/7 Sports, joins us. It's always great to have him on the show. Andrew, great to have you with us. Always a pleasure.
Great day.
Yeah, that's what I say. Great day. I mean, anytime we get a chance to talk to the great man himself. All right. So let's start with this. In the last week, you always break down and look at tape. So what tape have you looked at in the last week?
Well, typically I like to go back and watch the previous, you know, basketball game, which of course we had on Monday against Minnesota and earlier against Nebraska. So it's not quite like football where there's so much that you can't process all at once. You generally have an idea of what happened, but you know, as even you've heard Pat Chambers say, you always want to go back and look and make sure you got it right that first time.
All right. So when you looked at the those two tapes, what stuck out to you, pro and con?
I think that we'll start with the cons, obviously, because the last we saw from them was a lot of things about taste in your mouth, and it's just the disorganization on offense. You know, I went back and looked at the shot chart, and Tony Connor and Mike Watkins took 17 of the final 18 shots in regulation. Now, obviously, you look at that stretch, Penn State also came back against Minnesota, which is up to 4 at halftime. But for me, when you limit the variety of your offense, obviously you do a favor to the team that you're playing. And you do that especially when Lamar Stevens, who led the team in points at halftime with 11, only has one in that entire second half. So that's something I think they've got to get straightened out. They had a long drought in the second half, too, against Nebraska. You know, pros, of course, is that when Tony Carr needs to get it done, he does. The problem is you don't want to be in a situation when you're an 8-point favorite against Nebraska and then you're a 9-point favorite and lose against Minnesota.
Did the Lamar Stevens injury in the first half, did that limit him, in your opinion, any way, as you watched him?
I think so. You know, it's definitely fair, but I think at the very least, you know, if he's out there and competing, and there are other ways to impact the game, obviously, other than scoring, you know, you could use him as a decoy, right? Because he's a guy you've got to respect. And, you know, the person who did the most damage even outside of the perimeter shooting for Minnesota was Jordan Murphy, who could be the Big Ten player of the year. He's a similar body type to Lamar Stevens, and at the very least, you want to have that threat of Stevens out there where you can't quite leave him uncovered, but you need somebody out there, too, besides Tony and Mike. Even Shep Carter, who had that one non-shot that wasn't either Tony or Mike in the final 18 of regulation, he makes a three. I mean, that's a guy you've got to keep tabs on, but, you know, Minnesota really didn't because it was those two down the stretch, and then Penn State lost in overtime.
When Josh Reese was in the lineup, not only provided another passer, which we've talked about, but there's another element, too. In my experience, and it doesn't go back a week, having a fourth on the floor that you have to opens up the floor. The fact that Penn State has not had that the last three games, has that clogged up the floor at all?
I think so, too. And honestly, leading up to the season, you wouldn't qualify Josh Reeves as really a three-point threat, but his shooting has improved immensely. And where he's also helped is the rebounding. So he was the third leading rebounder when he was suspended and has not returned since the semester started, which really hurts when you've got, again, a guy like Mike Watkins getting into foul trouble but just simply has to leave the floor for a breather, because then you're losing two of your top three rebounders. So for Penn State, that showed up again against Minnesota, where you're looking at that team. They do have Jordan Murphy, but they were without Reggie Lynch. And in their previous three games, Minnesota had been out-rebounded by 46. Mm-hmm. They were plus 11 against Penn State. Right. And yes, they made a lot of shots, which is fewer opportunities for Penn State to grab defensive rebounds. But Penn State should have been better on the offensive glass. They weren't. And I think, again, this is a game where they've missed Josh Reeves, but especially in a game like this, where they've been able to punish Minnesota on the boards and defend the perimeter, they missed him a lot.
Okay, we talked pros and cons. We've talked about the cons. What are some of the pros you looked at in the tape?
I think, you know, there's better body language this time around. I think last year, you know, you look at that youth and, you know, the dry spell that they had, they weren't able to respond mentally, and that's something Pat Chambers is always harping on, rightfully so. But I think the reaction to questionable foul calls has been much better this season. You know, again, they're still in these games late. They're just decided by these smaller margins, which you could argue shouldn't be the case. But when they are in there, I mean, Tony's got the big guts to make those shots, to take those shots in the first place, and they're getting through. So they're not in a spot that, you know, the season is lost by any means. But, you know, even in these tighter situations, you can tell that they're a little bit more together and a little more up for those moments than they were a year ago.
There are only two teams in the Big Ten that have gone to the last media timeout with a chance to win every game. Only two. And they are Purdue and Penn State. What does that tell you?
Well, I think it's a team that it can obviously play to its competition, right? In one essence, it's a good thing when you're playing the likes of a Maryland as they went on the road. And then when you're playing teams that, you know, again, against Minnesota, who's been depleted not only without Reggie Lynch, but Amir Coffey, they should have handled, you know, perhaps they take him a little bit too lightly. And Minnesota, the team you look at that they split a year ago, each team winning at home. Right now, you have that confidence of the experience that you should be able to beat them, but also, you know, the motivation that a year ago when you went to their place, they really handled you. So it's a team that, you know, again, because they're playing up and down in their competition, it just kind of highlights their youth. And that's something they probably want to move off of, you know, moving forward when they have to go on the road. And they're going to be facing, you know, again, Rutgers at home, but also Michigan State and Purdue on the road.
When you watch Tony Carr, Andrew, does he need to do a better job in the first 10 to 15 minutes of a game of taking the temperature of the game and maybe not as many shots early?
I think that might be fair. You know, I think for Tony, and I sat down with him the preseason, wrote this long profile about what he needed to plan at that point, was, you know, he just needs to assert himself and take control, which just kind of goes against the grain of his personality and imposes his will. And I think we've seen that, you know, almost go too far in that essence this year in the form of shot making, but asserting yourself can manifest itself in many ways on the court. So for me, I think you're right in that taking the temperature might mean you're not going solely up the court, which again is more his style, not necessarily laid back, but again, that's the pace he wants to play at. You know, if the game, perhaps again like Minnesota, depleted roster, demands that you go a little bit more up-tempo, even if it's not defensively pressing, but you're just looking to get out in transition, try that earlier on. Change things up a little bit, as opposed to just that kind of default style where they're going slowly up court and he's trying to read things. Just go and attack, maybe see what happens.
When you look at Mike Watkins' development as a player, what have you seen?
You know, I think he's a guy that's improved really in all areas of his game. You know, called possession there down the stretch, and of course fouled out. But again, that's almost out of necessity because you don't have a reliable big man behind him. So the footwork's better. You know, the athleticism obviously stands out. He's become a double-double machine as of late. And people forget he's really only 6'9", 6'10". I mean, this is not a towering big man that's going to go out there. And of course, he's physically imposing, but not the most physically imposing guy or even top five in the league. So, you know, that speaks to his development, those little things. And it really starts, like, for all big men from the ground up.
Well, Isaac Haas is physically imposing.
Yes, he is.
That is the biggest thing on two legs I've ever seen. without question. How do you view the game at Rosemont coming up at Northwestern?
You know, again, we talked about this, I think, the last time we played Northwestern. You never want to categorize a game as must-win this early in the season. But, again, you know, earlier in the year when Northwestern was coming here, you felt like they needed it. I think they need this one, you know, again, because it's a road game that's winnable. You know you're depleted, but at this point you've had a few games without Josh Reeves. You know the new style that you have to play without him. And that's a Northwestern team that has really struggled. So for all the expectations they had, earlier in the year, they haven't met them. And again, it's the team Penn State's not only beat and beat recently, but one that they really need to in a tight spot, which again speaks to that mental toughness that they're still working on.
Andrew, always a pleasure. I always enjoy the conversation very much.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You as well, Steve. We'll see you soon.
Interesting post here. Of course, I knew I was going to get like a post that would say, oh, no, wait a minute, hold on. Well, excuse me, but I'm watching, okay? Let's see. Before and after the 2017 season, Troy writes, the Steeler offensive line was ranked in the top 10 by Pro Football Focus in both run blocking and pass blocking. DeCastro and Pouncey are two of the best run blocking, blah, 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 blah. Okay, why are there no holes? Why does he run the way he runs? Why does he run with the way he runs? Troy doesn't agree with me, but ask yourself, why is he the only running back in the league that runs the way he runs? There's no hole. Where's the hole? And where? Where is the... If there's a hole, he'd run through it. Do you think he's got... I know the hole's there, but, you know, my style's to wait.
So you don't think it's patience. It's a hesitancy.
I think there's no hole. Now, do you agree that Pouncey and DeCastro are two of the best offensive linemen in the league? I think Pouncey's one of the top five centers in the league, and I think Castro's one of the top 10 guards in the league. I really do. The other three are not really that great, and when Vance McDonald's in there, they get nothing blocking-wise from the tight end. Vance McDonald's not a good blocker.
No, they've had hardly any... blocking from the tight end after Heath Miller left. I think maybe a lot was heaped onto Jesse James too early.
I mean, Troy's being a bit unrealistic here. Troy, I'm going to say it straight out. You want to call the show? Fine. But ask yourself, why does he run the way he runs? And don't give me it's a neat thing to watch. He runs that way because there's no place to run. Okay, when there's no initial hole, that's why he waits. Now, do they get standoffs? Yes, they get standoffs. But again, I think Pouncey's one of the top five centers in the league, and I think DeCastro's one of the top 10 guards. But that's two of five positions and a tight end, especially in McDonald, that is not a very good blocker. I mean, I think, the running style, I think, is something, okay? Rack up a tape. Okay? Troy, rack up a tape. Okay? Take 20 runs by Le'Veon Bell. Tell me where the hole was initially on all 20 of them. Where? Now, you're going to get ranked high in Pro Football Focus on run blocking when the guy's gaining yardage. And as I said, they're grade A at getting stand. In other words, they don't. The Steeler offensive line does not allow a lot of penetration on runs. You notice that. There's really no penetration they give up on runs. They get a lot of stalemates, and then just enough and they're strong enough to then create a crease for him to run. But they're not good off the boom, off the attack. If they were, he wouldn't have to wait. So, Troy, okay, you're a huge Steeler fan. I got it. You're defending your guys. I got it. I have no dog in the fight. I'm just making the observation, like, you know, it's like they've praised and praised and praised. Okay, look at the tape. Where are the holes? Okay. He says he's on board with me 90% of the time. Troy, take a look at the tape. Okay? Most really good running games, there's a hole somewhere. He's a terrific back who's been praised for an interesting style of running, but it's a style he's been forced into. No running back wants to run that way. I mean, which running back wants to run that way? Which one? What running back wants to run that way?
So it kind of makes you wonder if Le'Veon Bell played in the 90s, and let's say he was the running back instead of Emmitt Smith for the Dallas Cowboys, how would his running style be then?
I don't know. I mean,
I'm just kind of throwing that out there.
I think Pouncey is terrific. I think DeCastro's terrific. I think Foster and Gilbert are okay. I think Villanueva is better than okay. I think the best blocking tight end is Jesse James. Vance McDonald is a slot receiver that's kind of a tight end. How about that?
Well, they brought in Vance McDonald for more of a downfield threat.
Right,
They brought him in because of Ladarius Green. I mean, what they wanted out of Ladarius Green, obviously, they couldn't get because of the injuries, and they were just trying to make up for that.
But, okay, Troy, ask yourself, why does Le'Veon Bell run the way he runs? Why? Can you answer that? I know he's giving me the Pro Football Focus grades and things like that. I can tell you right now, with Penn State, a couple times, Pro Football Focus has ranked a week where a Penn State lineman did really, really well, and they came to me and said, "That's not what the tape said." I mean, I've had that happen before, so it's not okay. I mean, it's a legitimate question. Why does Le'Veon Bell run the way he runs? And he's the only guy that does this, right? And he's been praised for his patience and his vision, and he should. And I think the Steeler offensive line on those plays brilliantly gets stalemates. So there's no penetration. There's nobody darting through to get to him. So, again, that's called being fair here. Being fair is when you say, hey, look, they get a stalemate, which means there's no penetration. That's praising the offensive line. But now ask yourself, why does he run the way he runs? Why? Does he, when he gets the football, did you ever think maybe there's no hole to run, and then he kind of waits until they do get one? Now, that's again praising the stalemate and then the ability to turn and then create a crease for him. I'm fine with that, but the fact that there's no initial blow off the football and open a hole for him. Now, that happens sometimes. That happened a couple times against Jacksonville. That's why they had more success going straight at. If you attack a team with speed straight ahead, that then takes away their speed advantage because now they're in a more confined area. So, Troy, way off. But you know what, Troy? Baby, get a tape. Ask yourself. I want you to take a look at 20 plays and tell me where, when he gets the ball, why is there no hole? Troy says he's patient. He waits for room to develop. Troy, there's no hole to start with. That's why he has to do it that way.